In March 2020, Albany
area primary health care, located in rural southwest Georgia, was in the epicenter of the COVID-19 hot zone. It happened when someone traveled there from Atlanta to attend a funeral. The virus spread quickly. The severe outbreak led to Albany being listed as number 4 in the world of COVID-19 cases per capita. As a town closed business to stop the spread, Albany area primary health care readied their teams to prepare for the worst. Throughout the battle against the virus, the health center never once closed its doors to patients. But there was a heavy price. Many providers and staff fell ill, and one of the first COVID deaths in Albany was an employee of the health center. In December, when the vaccine started to arrive, there was finally hope, and the health center got to work. They built out the infrastructure that would allow them to get the vaccines to their community and Georgians across the state. We're going to hear more about that today from 2 staff members. But before we get to that, I want to show you a brief clip from the video the health center put together about their fight against COVID.
No one knew across the organization, across the world, period, what COVID was, what was happening, how to handle it.
We all felt like we were in a pretty comfortable position. We knew we needed to be aware of it, but it didn't feel like it was going to hit us anytime soon. And then overnight, it did.
It was really unbelievable. I couldn't believe it was happening. You didn't want to believe it was happening here.
And today I am joined by Rhonda Arline, Director of Nursing from Albany Area Primary Healthcare, and Pam Reynolds, Volunteer Director, also from Albany Area Primary Healthcare. Thank you for joining us both today. I did have some questions for you guys, because the work that you're doing is really interesting, and I want to focus on the process of getting the vaccines to people, and also the work that you're doing in building the trust necessary to get the vaccines in the arms of people. So tell us first a little bit, and I'll let either one of you start off, Pam or Rhonda. Tell us a bit about your health center, the patient population, and who you serve and what the challenges have been for the past 18 months while addressing the pandemic.
Sure. Albany Area Primary Health Care is actually one of the largest community health centers in Georgia and one of our region's largest medical groups. We actually have about 26 different sites throughout Southwest Georgia. Our patient population is very diverse. We don't turn anyone away regardless of their ability to pay. So we see insured patients, uninsured patients, homeless patients. We have, like I said, a very diverse population of patients that we serve. And during the pandemic, some of our largest challenges was, of course, staffing. So many staff members fell ill, but we were able to kind of reassign some of our staff members. We have dental clinics, which were closed. So we were able to kind of reassign some of those staff members to some of our more needed areas. And, it was just all hands on deck, everyone pitching in, giving their all to make it work. And we were so thankful that when many closed their doors, we were able to stay open and continue to serve this community in a time that it really needed us.
And there was also the other challenge was there are not a lot of providers in the area, right?
Correct.
How far away was the nearest hospital, for instance?
Well, we have a large health center here, Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital, which served as actually one of the larger sites that were taking COVID patients during the pandemic. So we were extremely blessed to have Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital here in Albany.
Right. Now, just in terms of how COVID affected the community. In the video, there's people talk about, how you thought you were in pretty good position, and then the funeral happened, and then the virus quickly spread. Do you remember what you were thinking and feeling at the time?
Well, I remember thinking, how could Albany, Georgia, our little community, be the number two epicenter in the whole United States. I mean, that was shocking that we could have this many people in our community who would fall ill, die, be admitted to the hospital. I mean, it was hard to believe it was real.
And here we are 18 months later, and we're this vaccination effort is being rolled out. And since December, you guys have had the vaccines. Yet even still, Georgia State is a state that has one of the lowest vaccination rates for COVID. Why is that the case? And what do you think you're up against? And either one of you, feel free to answer that question.
I think one of the most common reasons, and, you know, I know Pam, you know, can contest, you know, we opened a mass vaccination clinic and we got to just talk to many people in the community. And I would have to say that fear is what resonated the most through conversations, just listening to some of the patients' experiences with COVID and through COVID, the driving factor to get vaccinated or to not get vaccinated has been fear. Fear of side effects, fear of long-term effects, just fear of the unknown. You know, I think going through what this community has been through with just COVID in general, you know, a lot of the patients that we saw that got vaccinated, they did not get vaccinated because they were just excited that a vaccine had come along. They had witnessed so many of their family, their friends, their loved ones die with COVID that they were afraid not to get it. It wasn't so much that they were convinced that the vaccine worked or that they had so much confidence in the vaccine. They felt it was their only option to live. And that fear was real. When in the conversations that we had while vaccinating patients, you could see the fear in their faces as we sit there and try to talk to them and walk them through the process. And there's no amount of education or information you can give to someone that is that fearful that's going to change their mind. It was pure fear.
I think another thing that we witnessed that was shocking to me was that people, once we opened the mass vaccine clinic, vaccination clinic, we had people coming from all over the state of Georgia. Now, we're thinking when this, you know, opportunity opened up, we thought it would mostly be Daugherty County or Baker County, the surrounding counties. But no, we had people driving 4 and 5 hours to get vaccinated in South Georgia. And what we also found out was, and this speaks to what you were saying, is why does Georgia have such a low number of people vaccinated, is we ended up vaccinating a lot of people that were not from our region, who were from Atlanta, Savannah, North Georgia, Middle Georgia. So people were having a hard time getting access. And I got to tell you, I was really proud of Albany, Georgia, and the number of opportunities that we put out there where people could get vaccinated. I mean, we had Phoebe Putney, a large hospital that Rhonda spoke of, that was doing the vaccines. We had the health department, and then we had Albany Area Primary Healthcare. That was a lot of access right here in Daugherty County. But the people who were lined up at our doors when we would have 400 and whatever, they weren't from Daugherty County.
In terms of, and I've, you guys have now to date administered, I guess, what is it, over 12,700 vaccines?
That's correct.
That's really amazing.
I think it's more like about 16,000 or something. Now
you've gotten to that point. That's terrific. And when you talked a bit about fear earlier, and I want to dispel this notion that there's this monolith of the same vaccine hesitancy. It comes in different shades and colors, and you talked about fear. But you know, in your world, and Pam, I know that you've been working on the front lines at this at the vaccination center. And do people, when they come in, what does their vaccine hesitancy look like?
Generally, you know, fear of, and you know, it's funny, but some of them are fear of needles beyond the vaccine. You know, you can sometimes, it's just having that conversation. You can just look at them when you're talking, trying to give them the information about the vaccine. They just give you this look of, you know, deer in headlights. You can see see the fear on their face, in their actions. Sometimes it comes out as questions. You know, they have a lot of questions. And, you know, one thing that I've always tried to do when educating patients is my job is not to convince you of why you should get this vaccine, but I want to provide you with solid information and kind of figure out where your hesitancy is coming from. You know, what is the root of you being hesitant? Because those patients that leave Albany area getting a vaccine, these people are going to go back out into the community and they're going to share their experience and share the knowledge that they gained from us to convince others to get vaccinated. Because we know that these conversations, you know, we see the media and all of the things that they have to say about why you should get vaccinated. But we know, especially in rural Georgia, those conversations happen at home, at the kitchen table, at church. And if you can get, you know, those people that come through our centers educated on the reasons to get vaccinated and that the vaccine is safe, that's where you're going to have the most impact in the community in getting people vaccinated.
So what you're saying is there's not one message that works. It's a conversation.
Absolutely. And influence. And influence. In South Georgia, you know, we're part of the Bible Belt. The religious sector has a major impact on what people believe, and the vaccine is no different.
You know, I can remember having some people who arrived in a carload to get the vaccine, and some people in the car wouldn't come in. And I can remember going out to the car and having a conversation with this elderly woman, and she was really the matriarch. She was the one who really needed it the most. She was the most vulnerable compared to her children. And I can remember, I mean, it took about 30 minutes of talking to her, explaining to her what would happen and what we knew about the vaccine and, you know, what we were offering and that she could come in. And if she wanted to even talk to a physician who was on site, she could do that. But I mean, it took 30 minutes of one-on-one attention to help her to allay the fears, the concerns that she would eventually take the vaccine. So I think that's part of when you look at future solutions, it's going to be the providers one-on-one, sitting with their patients, explaining the concrete, the real truth about the vaccine, and also dispelling myths that have been propagated, you know, whether it's at the home front or their friends or the internet. A lot of myths and tales and falsehoods are out there. And, you know, it's hard to combat them when people see them on social media.
And does it help? Because I know you ran this vaccination center that was staffed with volunteer vaccinators and ran with volunteers. And I want to hear more about that. Did that help? Because were these people from the community? Did that help dispel some of the misinformation?
Well, I think it did. Number one, you had all these volunteers, and we had volunteers not just in the actual clinic giving the vaccine, or doing the intake or doing data entry, but we had them on a phone bank who, when people called in or when AAPHC called their patients, they actually had them on the phone. And these are volunteers who are talking to them about why, you know, why we're doing this, why we're offering it. And the the medical reasons, the scientific reasons as to why to get the vaccine. So the volunteers were ordinary citizens like the ones we're talking to who are coming in to get it. So I think there was believability there. And also, I think as all these volunteers, these 60 volunteers that worked for 5 months, they were out in the community talking about it because they're witnessing it. They were a part of the solution. So I think they got their friends to also come in and get vaccinated. So I do think that helped having that exposure.
Well, now that the FDA has approved the Pfizer vaccine for 12 and older, is there something new? Do you guys have a new strategy to reach out to this population?
Yes, we actually don't provide the Pfizer vaccine within our clinics, but we have partnered with Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital. We've actually already started collaborating on mobile unit locations. We are we've already did a collaborative event at one of our pediatric offices where they pull up. We schedule the patients. We allow walk-ins. That's already happening at some of our pediatric offices. Thursday, we'll be at our Lee County location. And Saturday, we're having a collaborative mass event for this age group. And for anyone else that wants to get vaccinated, you know, there's no pre-registration. We are broadcasting that we'll be there. And it's for anyone that wants to come and get a vaccine.
And Phoebe does offer the Pfizer. They're the complement. We do the Moderna and J&J, and they do Pfizer. So it's a great partnership that our community has built.
And you're also partnering, I should have noted this earlier, with some of your volunteers are like physicians and nurses who are doing this on their own time, right? Which is really a very passionate calling, I guess, that brings them there. Am I right? Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. We had, when Shelley and Dr. Hotz called and asked me if I'd be willing to try to put together a volunteer group of people, I always think everything's very doable if you put enough energy to it. So when I started calling retired physicians, oh my gosh, they were thrilled that there was a place at the table where they could contribute so that Albany area primary healthcare physicians and nurses could continue to do their regular jobs, seeing patients who are ill. But these retired physicians and nurses who are retired, and not all of them are even retired, but that they could volunteer, they wanted to be a part of the solution to a nationwide crisis and definitely wanted to make a difference in their own community.
That's an amazing story. That is really, that's definitely something we want to share about promising practices out there in the field to bring them in and allow them the opportunity to contribute. That's
terrific.
Now, I have
to say this, that Albany area primary healthcare really had to go to bat for some of these retired physicians, because they had to get special permission for these physicians to come on board, and even some of these retired nurses to come on board, so that they were even eligible to give the vaccine. So all that paperwork had to be done by AAPHC to make that possible.
That's an important note for this. There are many states now, I guess, because we've been a few months into this vaccination effort, that are switching from the mass vaccination site model to just bringing the shots to where the people are. And it sounds like you guys are doing that with the mobile health units and things like that. And so in terms of bringing the shots to where the people are and combating vaccine hesitancy, is there an effort to sort of knock on doors to go out more, or are you at this point finding that they're coming to you still?
Well, we also have a home care program that we initiated back during the early COVID months that, during that time, patients were hesitant about coming to the clinics. So we did have a home care program where we delivered critical equipment to those patients. So we have provided some home vaccines, not many, but it's based upon the providers that have homebound patients that want the vaccine. We have delivered some home vaccines, and we're probably getting ready to expand that program based on need. And one of the things that I've noticed that has really helped, and it goes back to what Ms. Pam said about the providers having those one-on-one conversations, we now have the vaccines available within our practices, and they're available anytime. You know, patients that are being seen that were once hesitant about getting the vaccines, if the provider can have that conversation and the patient says, okay, yeah, I'll take the vaccine, we don't have to go and reschedule them for another day or schedule them at another site. They can get it right then and there while they're in the office. And that has proved to be such a great method of getting people vaccinated that were once hesitant. It is taking those conversations from the providers. And our providers have been very supportive in those efforts and wanting the access to give vaccines, you know, on demand. So we've been doing that, and it's really working very well.
That's great. That's good to know. You know, we're recording this podcast in the month where the Biden administration is declaring this a national month of action, and he wants to get 70% of all U.S. adults vaccinated. And there's all kinds of incentives being announced, you know, where there's the DoorDash initiative that NAC's a part of. There's a childcare flexible hours. Just in your experience, both of your frontline experience right now, what do you think it will take to get us across the finish line for this, to get to 70% nationally?
I think it's going to take a lot of effort. I mean, I personally do not think that we will reach that goal by July 4th. I just think it's, and I guess the reason I say that is the people I'm talking to who have not gotten vaccinated are really pretty, they're going to be a tough one to convince to take it. I really believe that. And so, it's not going to be offering people money. Not a large majority of people offering them money or childcare. I think all those things are helpful, and I think some people will do it. But I think we've got to figure out what is it that is the major, if there is a major hesitancy, what that is, and then attack that head on with solid research that shows why it is safe. I mean, I have so many of my peers say things like, I'm going to wait and see. I'm just going to wait and see. And I'm saying, well, what are you waiting for? Haven't you seen enough devastation from this to convince you that perhaps you really ought to do a little bit more research and figure it out for yourself? But, you know, what is it that's blocking you? But they say, no, I'm going to wait and see. And I think because it's an emergency use vaccine, that is one thing that keeps people from maybe taking that next step, is that they think, well, once it's commonplace, oh, yes, it's been approved, not just emergency use, but across the board, then yes, maybe I'll come back and get it. I think we better know what, if there is one major obstacle, what is it? And then we better attack whatever that obstacle is head on.
Yeah. I think also the media has played a great role in some of the vaccine hesitancy. Just for example, when the Johnson & Johnson vaccine first arrived, I couldn't supply enough of it. We went through the first 500 doses, Ms. Pam, in about a week. You know, and then after, you know, the pause, we've just not been able to gain that momentum back with the acceptance of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And another thing that, you know, we participate in quite a few research studies, and recently, one of the more recent ones that I've participated in, is one we're doing with, I think it's with Emory, called Messaging Matters. And through one of the listening sessions we had just Friday, you know, I tried to enlist a variety of age groups. And we had some of what we call the millennials involved. And one thing that one of the participants said that really resonated with me was, he said, you know, you all don't speak our language. And, you know, it kind of made me take a step back. He said, you know, when we hear all of the messages that are coming, he said, it sounds like your mom nagging you. He said, and what do people our age do when our parents nag us? He said, they do the opposite of whatever it is that you're trying to get them to do. And, you know, one of the suggestions that he made is, you know, try things from a different perspective. He said, maybe have some summits where you have people our age speaking our language so that we understand the message that you're trying to portray. He said, but, you know, everything that I've heard sounds more like, the way he said it was our parents fussing at us about something we did or did not do. And, you know, when he was speaking, I was really listening, and it just made me think, you know, I get what you're saying. I get that. You know, I have young daughters his age. So, you know, I get, you know, I kind of got what he was saying, and maybe that's not something that we've thought about.
That's an excellent point. And you know, the interesting thing is, I think we should note this for this podcast, is vaccinations is something that health centers have done since they started, right?
Yes.
I mean, so you guys, this has always been in the wheelhouse.
Yes.
And so COVID is just one more vaccine. But you know, you guys, health centers were selected for this effort, you know, as, you know, the centerpiece of a strategy. And what is it about our role, the health center role as providers, that makes their role in this effort so important? What is it you think you guys bring to the table?
Community trust. You know, we're just not visible when there's a pandemic. You know, we're visible all the time in the community, whether it's health fairs or giveaways, or we do something called a pocketbook for a pocketbook. We do that to increase cervical cancer screenings. You know, you come in and get your screening, you're put in a drawing for a designer purse. That's a small price to pay for what they are getting and the effect we're having in our community. I mean, you have to be innovative and creative to get patients involved in their care. And, you know, and that's always part of it. They have to be, you have to get that buy-in from those patients, and they have to trust you. Especially the population that we serve, trust is a huge issue. And they trust us.
And I can speak to that trust too, from a different perspective. I can remember when AAPHC didn't exist, and when it was first created and the physicians got together, wrote the grant, submitted it, and started it. And when Albany Area Primary Healthcare started, they were seeing patients that no one else wanted to see. They were seeing patients who were really neglected, and their doors were wide open. So they've been around a long time, and that belief system in the healthcare delivery and what they do for their patients, you know, it is well known, and it's well known across all sectors. I mean, it's not just for the poor or the ones who have been neglected. I mean, I'm a patient of Albany Area Primary Healthcare and have been from day one. And it's because if you see something and you see the quality of care, you want them to take care of you. And so they have built a huge reputation, and it's, and I think it is admired. I mean, I think the National Health Service Corps, they understand the population when they send doctors down to serve here. They know this health center, and it is well-respected locally, regionally, statewide, and beyond.
That's true. Yeah, you guys do great work there. And I know I've already asked this question a couple of times, but I always like to sort of get make sure that we get you guys give the answers that you want to give. If somebody's visiting the health center or you're talking to them at the vaccination site, and they're on the fence, if somebody is listening to this podcast, for instance, and they're on the fence, what is your advice to them?
You know, I honestly believe those of us who have a good relationship with our provider, if you are hesitating, I think you need to go to the source, the person you have put your trust in, your own personal health care for years. Go to them and ask them, what would you do? Would you, is your mother vaccinated? Do you believe in this? Are you vaccinated? I mean, I think if you go to someone who you every, you know, you let them take care of your diabetes, your hypertension, your congestive heart failure, and if they take care of everything else about you, why wouldn't you ask your provider? Don't talk to your friends or the internet or social, look at, to social media. I would go to my provider, and if my provider said, Pam, you need this, then I would take that. If I was on the fence, that would convince me.
Rhonda, do you have anything to add?
Well, you know, I would definitely say do your research. You know, I always have believed that an informed decision is the best decision. You know, I think one of the most important things you can do is let people know where to find this information. There's a lot of information out there. Some of it credible, some of it's not. And we have to be able to point, you know, our patients in the right direction as to where to find this information. If you don't believe what I'm telling you, let me tell you where I get my information from. I think that's important.
That's an excellent point. I'm going to close with a final question. Just about the last 18 months of fighting this pandemic, speaking more personally, if each of you could tell me, like, what were some of the low and high points for you as providers and volunteers?
I think the low point was when our probate judge early on, contracted COVID. And she was a beloved member of our community, had been the probate judge here in Daugherty County for years. And she was just a classy woman. She had a lot of style and she was fair-minded, and she died. And you know, that was the first death that in our community early on. I mean, really, I think it was like March. And once that happened, that was for me a real low point. I mean, a real low point.
I think the lowest point for me was I was driving. I worked part-time at a long-term care facility. And I was driving to work one Saturday morning and the phone rang. And it was another nurse friend of mine, you know, informing me that another former nurse that I had worked with, went to school with, known for a long time, had passed away with COVID. And it was like a punch in the gut. It felt unreal. And it was like I just felt a sense of helplessness. You just felt like everything that you've ever known was changing and you couldn't do anything about it. Life as we knew it was changing right before our eyes, and none of us could do anything about it. The uncertainty of what the next day would bring. And it always brought worse news the next day than the previous day. So I think that was probably the lowest point for me. It made COVID real to me. We saw it on the news, you know, and at that point, you know, this was early March when some of the very first deaths in our area were occurring. And, you know, it just kind of shook me really, really hard and almost unbelief, You know, she was a nurse. She was working, taking care of patients, and she's gone. She's gone. And if I had to say the high point would absolutely be the thank you all for being here at the Mass COVID clinic. Thank you. The thank yous that we got from the patients in the community. They were so thankful for Albany Erie being there to respond and to make the vaccine available. It was just an overwhelming response from our community saying thank you and how much they appreciated us being there. You know, those moments make it all worthwhile. You know, we were still, the COVID had not went anywhere at that point, even while we were giving vaccines, but you were willing to take that chance to bring such a needed service to this community, and to see the outpouring of gratitude from those patients was hands down my highest point.
I agree with you 100% about that as a high, that you, when people were there to get their vaccine, it was almost as though they felt like they were going to be all right. They were going to mm-hmm. live. That there was going to be a tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, they didn't feel, people were so frightened. They didn't believe that. They really thought any day now I could get it and die. So, yeah, you were alleviating a lot of fear. And also, what was a real high for me was it reminded me of stories I've read years ago about World War II and how also ordinary citizens who really didn't have necessarily any sophisticated training could suddenly do something for the war effort during World War II here in the States while the war was going on. And so to me, when we started this volunteer clinic and we had 60 people saying, yeah, sign me up, I want to do this. And they did it day after day for 5 months. They were part of the war effort against the pandemic. And I think it gave people a sense of purpose, that they were going to be part of the solution. And I think that's why people just poured, and they were so willing to be there day in and day out. And I think they also saw exactly what Rhonda said, the absolute thank you from all these thousands of people who got vaccinated at the clinic. I mean, every day we saw it. I mean, people were just relieved, finally relieved, that they might have a life after COVID.
Well, that's a great way to put it, that they realize there's going to be a tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Rhonda and Pam, I want to thank you both for joining us today on Health Center News and sharing your stories and telling us about your work on the front lines of COVID. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for having us. Thank you.
Good spending some time with you.